I believe in aliens. I believe that they exist. I believe in aliens. If you don't believe, I'll stop you in the face today. If you don't believe, I'll stop you in the face. I believe in aliens. I believe in aliens.
All right, welcome to the first ever episode of the Starry Time Podcast with Bran.
And Dave.
That's exactly right. Hey, Dave, one thing that I think people are asking immediately is, what's with the spells?
Well, if you know me and Brandon, you know that we aren't the ones, we aren't the your typical wizards. And so when Brandon says spells, he's referring to the lettering of the name of our podcast.
Right, because if you say it out loud, it's actually like Starry Time.
So. Starry Time. You know, it actually sounds as if maybe a pirate was interested in our podcast and they were trying to say story. But no, it is a play on words in which we are taking the familiar phrase story time, which is usually accompanied by with and to a person or people, in this case, me and Brandon, so that's Brandon and Dave. But instead of story time, because we're talking about celestial objects and creatures and aliens and ghosts and stuff, it is starry time, as in the other familiar word to listeners, starry, as in starry night, the famous painting by Van Gogh.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of where we merge these together is basically instead of seeing yourself sitting around a campfire, see yourself sitting around just a sky full of stars.
But I think the question is, why didn't we spell starry correctly?
Oh, you put, you mean the R's? And
yeah,
and
like, so starry is double R. We did just a single R.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, story has just the one R, right?
Right.
And so it kind of really hits home the fact that we're trying to make that pun, and I don't want there to be any confusion.
I think we might have shot ourselves in the foot with that, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've already had we've already gone up against some controversy, dealing with it. We expected it.
This is the controversy we've hit already. The guy who made our wonderful album art spelled starry correctly the first time with double R, and I said no, change it. And then a guest that we have coming up in a couple weeks was very confused about, because he's a doctor, he has his doctorate, so why in the world
he knows how to spell because he has his doctorate.
Well, I mean, that's typically the way it goes.
We didn't expect anything less from him.
That's exactly right. So that's kind of who we are as a Starry Time. But Dave, let's tell him a little bit about ourselves coming into this podcast, because this is a paranormal podcast. So mm-hmm. where are we personally?
Right.
You know.
You know me, Brian. I like to point people to songs.
That's exactly right.
And maybe you've heard of the movie The Lion King. In the opening track, they have that line about a wide-eyed wanderer. And I consider myself to be that. When that part of the song comes up in that movie, I kind of, my eyes light up in that and just say, that's me, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And specifically, I think of the scene later in the movie where they're just laying there looking at the stars and they talk about, what are those stars? And Pumbaa says that he thinks they're just, you know, giant balls of gas after Timon had said that they were some kind of spirits. And then they just all start laughing. You know, I think that's kind of like a picture of this podcast. There's going to be a lot of different perspectives and views on what we're looking at. But in the end, let's just laugh about it. Let's just know that we all have different perspectives. We're all wide-eyed wanderers.
That was beautiful. Like, that's way more better than I'll ever come up with.
I was off the cuff, too, yeah, by the way.
I'm going to go with a song, too.
Good choice.
And I'm going to go with the Coldplay classic, if you will, Hurts Like Heaven. And here's why I'm going with Hurts Like Heaven. Let me explain.
Go for this. Yeah.
So when I think about, you know, the paranormal, the UFOs, the ghosts, the etc. I think of how some people just desire for anything to be real, and because they're hurting, you know, it's hurting. It hurts them like hell, but they're desiring for something like heaven to come and help them in that hurt. So it kind of hurts them like heaven. And so as we talk to these people, I think what we'll see is people searching for something and finding UFOs, ghosts, etc. So it hurts like heaven.
You know what? Yours was better than mine, because I really think that you had to do a lot more maneuvering to get to the you know.
Well, yeah, no, but I don't think I maneuvered correctly. But all that to say, Dave and I are by nature skeptics. We don't. We wouldn't say that we believe in the paranormal. And so this entire podcast is Dave and I talking to people in the field, trying to figure out why do so many people believe that the paranormal exists. And that might be you listening. And so, Dave, for the person out there that's listening that's like, yes, aliens exist, what message do you want them to hear from us before we go into our first interview?
The message I want you to hear is that me and Bran, yeah, we're skeptics, but we're opening up the conversation. And we're willing to see both sides, you know, take evidence from both sides without, you know, putting up walls. And we encourage you to do the same. Maybe it's, you can be as locked into an open-minded view about aliens as you can in a closed-minded view. And either one of them is a wall. And when there's a wall, you aren't able to see the stars. And this podcast is about seeing the stars.
That's exactly right. That was so good. We're really good for 7:30 in the morning. I'll be honest with you.
I just made a sandwich.
We're just going to be honest with you. We've recorded some interviews, and so we're recording our intro and exits after the fact. And
intros and exits.
And currently we're recording the first episode intro and exits at 7 a.m. So there's that.
There's only limited time that me and Brian can really just get a good talking in.
Sometimes it's just early.
Yeah, and sometimes we're both still doing something else. It's not even like we actually scheduled a really convenient time.
But I want people to know that that doesn't mean that we're not excited.
Yeah, we save the best of our time for the interviews, and then we find other times to do these little bits.
So real quick, just to tell you a little bit how the show will work, every week we're going to bring in an expert in the field of some sort of paranormal and interview them and talk to them about the topic. And this week we're really excited. Actually, the first 2 weeks we're going to be interviewing a guy named Preston Dennett, who is just a brilliant guy in this field. And so we split this interview up into two different interviews because it's like once we got to talking to him, it just went and in the best way possible, it just went. And so our first section is going to today's episode will be about UFOs, aliens, etc. And then next week, I'm excited about it. We're going to be talking about out of body experiences and how that plays into the paranormal and how everything is connected. That way. So I'm excited about that.
And he's, Brandon, as Brandon already said, just full of knowledge. And the only way that this podcast works is that we interview people that have knowledge because me and Brandon don't. So these conversations would be really short except for the fact that the people we're talking to are just mind-blowingly filled with just stories. And that's what makes Starry Time.
That's exactly right. So thank you guys for listening to Starry Time. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our interview with Preston right here on the Starry Time podcast.
All righty then.
Starry Time News. This is Steven. Peace-loving aliens try to save America from nuclear war, claims Moon Mission astronaut Edgar Mitchell. Edgar Mitchell was on the Apollo 14 flight back in 1971, claims that aliens have stopped governments from testing nuclear devices multiple times in an effort to spare the country from war. Also in the news, two men discovered that they were living the seemingly same lives when running into each other at their vacation spot in Wales. They both had wives and children of the same name, drove the same cars, and of course had the same vacation spot. This leads researchers to believe that the science of synchronicity may be true, which allows that two people can be living the seemingly same life without knowing it. The final news story is of a restaurant X. Mark O.C. interviewed a woman 20 years ago who claims that she went to a diner and 4 days later it was seemingly gone, like it never existed. Some say the name gives it away, that it has a mysterious component to it, but many believe that aliens themselves have taken up this restaurant, and that is why it is but a fading shadow in this world. For Storytime News, this is Steven.
All right, we're going to get right into it. We're excited, Dave. Tonight we have a very special guest. Preston Dennett is with us tonight, and he knows just about everything there is to know about anything in the paranormal realm. Preston's been investigating UFOs since 1986, when he discovered that his family, friends, and coworkers were having dramatic, unexplained encounters, and since then, he has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of the paranormal phenomenon. He's a field investigator for MUFON, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, the author of 17 books. Yes, that's 17 books, written hundreds of articles. He's been on numerous radio shows, including Coast to Coast, and also Art Bell's new show, which was fantastic, Midnight in the Desert. He was just on
so good
a couple weeks ago. And we are very honored to have him with us tonight. Preston, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, yeah. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm excited.
Preston, tell us a little bit about you that's not in that bio, some fun facts about you before we dig into all the fun stuff.
Okay, well, let's see. I'm the fifth of six kids. Let me see what else. I work as a bookkeeper. Not a whole lot else to say. I enjoy doing this kind of stuff. I've been doing it for quite a long time.
Yeah, for sure. And
that's where my passion is, you know. So,
well, Preston, we have to let you know up front that this whole show is me and Dave trying to figure out this whole paranormal thing. Like, we are actually, by nature, we're skeptical. We wouldn't say that we're believers in this, and we're trying to get as much information as we can about this, and maybe we'll come out on the other end believing. So tonight we're gonna be skeptics. We're gonna ask you hard questions because we want to figure out why do so many people believe in the paranormal universe. Does that sound good to you?
Hey, yeah, I'm ready. Bring it on.
Awesome. All right, tell us a little bit about how you got into studying UFOs. We know in the bio it said you started in 1986, but how did you actually get into it?
Yeah, you know, I was actually really skeptical, and I think a lot of people in my family were. I found out later that some of them had secret sightings and were talking about them. Every now and then you hear it on the news or, you know, in search of, and I didn't believe it each time, but there was this one report on the news about this sighting over Alaska. And again, I didn't believe it, but it was kind of interesting. This pilot said he saw this object pacing his commercial jet airliner for, you know, a good time there up in Alaska. And I thought, well, this pilot's crazy. He's obviously hallucinating, or he's just flat out lying. I don't know what's going on, but there's just no way that, you know, this is an alien craft. I mean, forget about it.
Right.
But, you know, this is where I kind of made a mistake made a left turn into the Twilight Zone. I started asking people. I asked, you know, people at work. I was asking people in my family. I don't know. For some reason, it interested me. I found out later this was actually a really good sighting. It had radar returns and all kinds of stuff. They didn't say that at all on the news. It was all very tongue-in-cheek, and they joked about it nervously. But I found out that my brother had seen a UFO, and he was actually with two other people, and they chased it across the San Fernando Valley here. I ended up interviewing all of them, you know, just to figure out what they saw. I'm like, oh, this is crazy, you know. and they described this kind of metallic craft with lights on it. And it was zigzagging and hovering, and that they chased other cars that were following it. So it was kind of interesting. Huh. And I found out that my sister-in-law and her two friends saw these lights over Van Nuys Air Force Base and just hovering there, very anomalous lights. And I ended up interviewing them as well, trying to figure out what they saw. And my sister-in-law also said she had a face-to-face encounter with gray-type ETs.
Oh, wow.
Now, mind you, this was like before Whitley Strieber's book had come out and, you know, it got really popular. And she's, at this point, I started to check out books on UFOs thinking, you know, I'm going to find out what they really are. And, you know, which is weather inversions and so on. Mm-hmm. But no, that's not what the book said. They said they were real for the most part. And so, yeah, I started asking everyone I knew and I got a real shock. It wasn't good news. You know, I had to change my whole worldview. And really changed my life in a big way. I couldn't believe aliens were invading our planet, and no one really even knew about it, it seemed like. So yeah, that's kind of how I got started.
Interesting.
So you said that that was bad news to you, so was it something that you had not actually wanted to be true? It's because you, your worldview, since it didn't support it, that was that kind of shattered it in a bad way?
Yeah. You know, I consider myself a reasonably, you know, intelligent guy. I was taking a lot of science classes in college. Mm-hmm. I was very into science fiction, certainly.
Hmm. But, right.
I didn't believe in these types of things. I did not. And yeah, it was really hard for me to accept, and sometimes still is.
Right. So you're like where you were, where me and Brandon are now, essentially, because that's kind of where we are, kind of just like hearing about this crazy stuff. And from our perspective, it's something that, like, it just doesn't really fit in with our kind of view of the world currently. That's why we are trying to expand that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I felt like I was living in two different worlds, honestly, because there was this UFO community. There was actually a whole mountain of evidence out there already. People had been researching the subject for years and years, I found out. Mm-hmm. But that was a real shock. So right. I had no idea, you know, about Betty and Barney Hill and, you know, Travis Walton and things like this. No idea.
Sure.
And found out that it's actually much deeper, pervasive and worldwide and ongoing. And there's a lot of really credible people who have seen these kind of things.
Sure.
So how would you say that, like, let's say that you hear about something, it's an individual story that you already mentioned earlier, how you'd heard about friends and family and how they, you kind of interviewed them and stuff. So what would be the way that you approach when you hear of a story? How do you go about validating each individual one, determining whether it is legitimate or just something? Because, I mean, even if there are some that are bona fide, there obviously is going to be some that aren't, and you have to sort those out, right? So what is your method of kind of distinguishing between the two?
Well, initially, it was just talking to people, honestly. And for the most part, that's what I've been doing all these years. You know, when I found out that my friends and family and coworkers had these experiences, I knew they weren't lying at me. I'd, you know, lived with these people for years and years. I think I had a pretty good handle on who they were and could tell when they were lying. And it was pretty obvious right off the bat that most of these, if not all of these people, you know, who were within my circle of family and friends, they weren't lying. It was obvious.
Right.
I found that people are actually, you know, on the whole, pretty reluctant to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't get a lot of hoaxers. I haven't found that. And it, initially, I just sort of interviewed people. And, you know, I'm going to record these interviews. And then I'm like, you know what, I have to do follow-up interviews. And so I started, you know, getting more and more into it. As time went on, I started writing about it. And finally, you know, I started getting some really big cases. And that's when I would buckle down and, you know, I called the police. I had them referring me cases. I was putting up flyers. I was camping out in hot spots.
Wow. You know,
doing, I wanted to see these things myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, which I ended up actually doing.
Oh, nice.
You've seen one?
It's happened more than once.
Well, tell us about that, Ro. Let's not just graze past that. So you've actually seen UFOs.
I'm going to call them that because I don't know what the heck they were.
So how close were you? Like, how close is the encounter that you've actually partaken in?
Well, you know, there's been a bunch. I'm going to tell you, it started pretty much right away as soon as I started investigating this stuff. And the first one was really weird because I didn't talk about it, and I almost kind of forgot about it. And this is something I've read about, certainly in the UFO literature, where people have an experience and they forget about it. And it's not like I even really forgot about it, to be honest. It's just I didn't even really think about it. I don't know how to describe it, but I remember this happened distinctly, you know, one late July. This was, you know, around 1980s, I'm going to say 87 or 88, right after I started investigating this stuff, really. Yeah. You know, okay. I was going to the groups, I was going to the landing spots, I was head over heels trying to find this stuff, you know, if it was real or not. And damned if I'm not driving down the road, you know, on the way home from my sister and brother-in-law, and had been talking about UFOs furiously, and this ball of light, I kid you not, drops down out of the sky. This was at night, and my first thought is, well, look at this glowing bird. You know, what is this? A golf ball. You know, I'm looking at it, and it's right in front of the windshield here, and I'm going to say about maybe 2 feet at the most, and it darts back and forth twice, and I'm like, well, that's not no hummingbird. It's not a hummingbird. This is what I'm thinking, you know? And it's this ball of light, honest to God, and I'm like, well, what in God's name is this? You know, and it stayed there just a second, long enough for me to kind of really get a good look at it. And then it darted off, you know, down the road a little bit, dipped down, then went right up to the canopy of trees and straight up into outer space is where it, you know, ended up going or disappeared that direction. So I'm like, wow, you know, and didn't really talk about it for, you know, a good couple of years there. I don't know. It was all pretty overwhelming. And I've had some much better ones since then.
What would you say is the best story you have, the best UFO experience?
Oh, it's hands down got to be with this lady that I was interviewing who was having crazy encounters. You know, I call her Wendy. She doesn't want her real name used.
Okay.
But, you know, I met her at this Crystal Skull conference, and I thought, oh, you know, they're showing crystal skulls. Not, you know, I'll see one because that sounded kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And so I got to see it, and she was there. And she started telling me she had UFO encounters. I'm like, well, can I interview you? And she let me interview, and she ended up having these, I mean, she said, really major encounters, which were pretty darn extensive in terms of being taken on board, you know, being examined, the whole deal, having hybrid babies. I mean, it went on.
Wow.
And she was able to produce some friends who confirmed her experiences and had sightings with her. And said her neighbors had seen also UFOs and, you know, was able to produce a number of witnesses supporting her case. And so I'm like, can I, you know, interview you? This is amazing. And she agreed to it. And she's telling me her incredible story. I mean, once she woke up, she was being abducted in midstream.
Oh, wow.
And she wakes up in the middle of it and says, put me back, you know, and they put her back. And she says another time she woke up, the grays were around her bed, she said, and she lashed out, kicked one in the neck, apparently, you know, breaking its neck.
Oh.
And they filed off. And I'm like, all right, you know, this is hard for me to believe. This is what,
yeah.
I did, you know, is what I'm thinking as I'm transcribing this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was kind of hard to believe. And, actually, I had two sightings with her. The initial one is, you know, as I was transcribing this interview, I got this really weird feeling to run up onto the roof of my condo here, where I was living at the time, and it was just, you know, not something I've ever done, mind you, because you're not allowed to go up there.
Okay.
So it's just not something I'd normally ever do, and hadn't, but just got this overwhelming impulse to do it. Ran up there, brought my eyeglasses because I'm slightly nearsighted. And no sooner had I got up there, honest to God, when this light shows up, and it's about 50 feet away, and it starts darting around. And I get this telepathic message from it, you know, we're Wendy's ETs, or hi, you know, it's us. You know, you didn't believe, but here we are. Look what we can do. It was the kind of feeling I was getting from these guys. And, you know, I'm not, you know, a sensitive guy in that regard of, you know, feeling energies, or at least I wasn't at the time.
Yeah.
But more so I am now, actually. I will, but that was a shock.
So they sent that message to you telepathically?
Well, it was kind of the feeling I got.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
it
words.
It was a prompting.
No.
That's even
more interesting than seeing a UFO, I think, would be being kind of like prompted to go to an area to see one. You know, that kind of brings on a whole other aspect of it, that they would be kind of like, in a way, attracting you to see them. You know, like they wanted you to see them.
Right, which is how they abduct a lot of people. I mean, if you read the books. And you know, this is where it gets really amazing, because you know, she's talking about having all these sightings. I'm like, well, I want to see a UFO, because, you know, yeah, I'd seen that, but it was quick, it was over, and I'm, so I wanted more.
And she's sorry, I didn't cut you off.
She says, I'll try and set it up, is what she said, actually, and she did. She set up this incredible sighting.
That's ridiculous. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was it was unbelievable. She said, here's where we go. You know, we went to this appointed place in time. It was off the 210 freeway, you know, right there off the freeway in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And she said, this is where they said to go. You know, this is where I got the message. You know, she's a really sincere lady. She actually became a really good friend. So I was hiking up there with her and my sister-in-law and her son. And me and Wendy got right up to the top of the spot. And this is when this thing shows up. She screams. She grabs my arm, twists me around. And did you not? 50 feet away, tops, maybe closer, was this giant glowing sphere. Mm. And it was beautiful, probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, honestly. It was covered with lots of lights and hovering maybe 20, 50 feet up and totally silent and as big as a house.
And oh, my God.
Obviously. It was huge and right next to us. I mean, right there. No doubt about it.
Did you feel it? I know you said you saw it, but did you hear it or like kind of feel it? Or like, was it like heated or anything? Like,
no.
Was there a temp? So it just was like, it was just a kind of almost like just there. Floating there.
Yeah, it was just this beautiful sphere covered with lights.
Wow.
Really hard to describe. Kind of like a dandelion flower. You know how that
looks? Oh, right. Yeah,
That's kind of what the lights look like, this kind of sphere of lights.
And that's like a non-traditional, because most people, when they think UFO, they think like a, you know, the disc shape, like a flying saucer kind of a shape.
No, it wasn't metallic. But it was this thing. You know, I don't know what I don't know what the heck it was.
How long did it stay above you for?
It was not quite above us, really, off to the side there, and it was just maybe 30 seconds to a minute. I mean, as soon as we got a real good look at it, it darted off.
Did it dart off quickly, or was it slow, or how did it move?
Slow at first, and kind of wrapping around this mountain here that we had just climbed up this hill, and then really took off, zipping around it pretty darn quick, and it was gone, and there was no chance of following it at all.
Best sighting. The thing that I think is crazy about that sighting, and that like makes it kind of just separate than a lot of the stories I hear, is when there's like a bunch of you, and you're all seeing it, and just like have the same, you know what I mean? It's not just one person seeing one thing, but you all encounter it.
My sister-in-law didn't see it, neither did her son. They were really mad, let me tell you.
So it was you and the lady that you're, Wendy,
right?
Okay.
Right.
Were they not there with you guys, or did they, was it quick so fast they just weren't able to turn around in time?
They were about, a couple of hundred yards down the path, which was pretty steep.
Oh, okay. Wow,
it's pretty steep.
Stinks.
So they just missed it. I mean, it was literally right over the rise there.
Wow. Let me ask you this. As you've researched over hundreds of cases, what are some characteristics that seem to be similar across the board? As you look at UFOs and aliens, what are some characteristics that you see in every single case that makes it kind of like there's no way to explain how it's the same across the board?
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of depends on what type of encounter you're looking at. With sightings, I initially noticed a number of patterns, for sure. And I noticed that people usually saw UFOs when they were with other people. I noticed that UFOs were often seen in, you know, not just one UFO, but usually two or three or four. So that was a surprising pattern. There were movements, you know, there were types of movements I became very familiar with, which is, you know, hovering like a rock in space, unmoving at all, or falling leaf motions, or darting. I heard lots of descriptions of low buzzes and humming noises. And as far as people being taken on board, you know, it doesn't vary a whole lot. I have to tell you, for a long time there, I was getting pretty much the same story. It's varying more and more now, but I'm getting a lot of people talking to me. But I've talked to so many people who've been taken on board and examined by Grays.
Oh. You know,
they see the rounded ceilings, you know, the indirect lighting. A lot of this stuff is in the media now. But, you know, one of my first cases involved a hybrid baby presentation type thing. And this was before Bud Hopkins and, you know, David Jacobs and John Mack had put out all their books, and it was really, you know, Whitley Strieber.
So, could you kind of describe what that is? Because I think that that's something I don't think a lot of our listeners will be familiar with.
Right. This was something that kind of shocked me. This was something that people report when they're taken on board a UFO is they're examined, and often they'll have, you know, samples taken of their eggs or sperm or their hair or their skin and their blood and things like this. You know, very much like a doctor's examination in a lot of ways. And later on, some of these same people, you know, particularly women, there's a lot of cases involving women, are taken back on board and are shown these babies, which appear to be half gray and half human.
What?
I know how it sounds. It's very science fiction. It's very ridiculous. I mean, if these are really different species, first of all, you know, they can't intermix, at least according to our understanding of genetics.
Right.
You know, this is what I'm thinking. And yet she's describing this story that, you know, I haven't heard except for in a couple of books that were just beginning to come out. So I knew she hadn't read it. She described all these details that I've since heard, you know, many times, where people see these incubator-type devices where they're told to hold these babies and give them love and try and help them understand emotion, because this is something the Grays seem to be pretty interested in.
Is there a theory behind why the Grays want to make these babies? Like, what's the point? Like, what's the gain for them?
Well, you know, this is something we can only speculate on to a certain extent, but
right.
We do have some stories coming from abductees. I've heard at least 4 or 5 times that, you know, the people have asked the ETs this, and they've said, "Oh, we had a war, you know, a chemical war, or a, you know, it's inferred that it's atomic. It's different, you know, in different people's stories, but otherwise, it's the same. And their Grays races become damaged. They can't reproduce in the same way they've been reproducing through cloning." And now they're coming to us to rejuvenate the race because in some way we're related to them.
That's impressive.
So I'm like, you know, and I hear this a couple from separate sources, and I'm like, all right,
yeah.
You know, this is a little bizarre, but
that's wild.
I ended up, you know, writing articles about it.
Yeah.
You know, and finding more accounts that match up. So there are patterns to this stuff that makes it look like, you know, it's real. And certainly, I mean, the evidence... There's a chain of evidence leading from sightings, which are confirmed on radar, you know, and have multiple witnesses, to landing trace cases. You know, there's 1,000+ landing trace cases at least, a lot more, really, or with burned ground and what have you. And then we get on to these onboard experiences where people are left with, you know, scars and sometimes unexplained healings. I wrote a book about that, or injuries for that matter.
Yeah.
And it just goes on. There's an enormous amount of evidence. This is something I think skeptics really don't understand. It's a lot of stuff out there. There's
right.
enough in the public arena, I think, to convince anyone who's willing to take a good objective look at it and search it out.
I think one thing that, and that's what the next question I was going to ask you is, you've already mentioned how several people that you already asked didn't even admit it at first because it's something that, you know, they just don't know how to explain. And I think that just the overall view of people that have that is that, you know, that it discredits them to say something like that. And then whatever else they have to say, you just won't hear it, because if you flat out deny the existence of all, any of this stuff, then it doesn't matter what they have to say. You're just, you know, you've already kind of made up your mind. Which is why we kind of do this podcast, to try and like ask the questions, even with, you know, just try to get to the bottom of it, open-minded. And
right.
But what do you think? Do you think that that's like a big struggle for people, is to be willing to investigate it because they're afraid that it will polarize them from the rest of the what they would consider, you know, just what they already believe and what their friends and families think? Do you think that there's a syndrome that people think that it will paint them as kind of a crazy person or whatever to think these things.
Oh, yeah. I think to a certain extent that was true more in the past than it is now. I remember it divided my family a little bit, for sure. I mean, my dad was not happy. He's like, you know, I should have put you in church. You know, the Roswell was a balloon. What are you talking about? You know, he was not happy.
That's interesting. Let me ask you this. We always hear about, you know, that there's possibly, you know, there's possibly files that have been stored away. They're classified. The government, every president actually knows that aliens exist, all this stuff. Do you buy into that? Do you think that the government is, you know, holding all this classified information from the public because it would freak the public out so much? Or do you think that's kind of more hoopla than anything else?
No, I'll call myself a believer because you can pretty much demonstrate that it's true. There are enough documents that, you know, have been released through the Freedom of Information Act to prove over and over again that, first of all, our government, and when I say that, I'm talking about, you know, various agencies of our government, like the Air Force or the Army or the NSA or all of them, for that matter, have lied flat out about their interest in UFOs, have given contradictory statements and are covering this up.
Yeah.
The Citizens Against UFO Secrecy sued the NSA to get documents, and the NSA wouldn't release them, saying that even, you know, the judge who looked at them refused to release them, saying it was too sensitive. And if you go to, like, David Greenwald's website, Black Vault, or John Greenwald, his last name is Greenwald, I forget if it's David or John, yeah, he's got thousands and thousands of these documents. He specializes in this particular
Was that the
area.
Guy that put out that Project Blue Book thing or something like that got shut down or something like that? Do you recall that?
I think the Blue Book files have been recently more de-accessed.
Yeah.
I did hear something about that. I don't know if that's the same guy or not, but the point is the documentation that's out there absolutely proves that our government is covering this up. And I've certainly talked to a number of people who are what you would call whistleblowers.
Yeah.
Right.
Can you go into a couple of the documents that kind of blew your mind, that was like, I can't believe that this is a document that the government held that so obviously shows that there's aliens and that ETs?
Well, one that comes to mind is the Battle of Los Angeles.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of that, but
that
was an incident that occurred way back, right after actually Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
A couple of months after that, and so it was in L.A. The whole area was really jittery, and there was some sort of air raid because these objects were being seen coming over the ocean there. And they shut down the entire city, turned off all the lights, total blackout, and a bunch of people watched these objects coming over the city. They were shot at by 1,500 rounds of ammunition, and five people ended up dying. It was a huge case. And these objects just went back over the ocean and were not seen again. And there was a cover-up the next day. The military said it was just balloons. But when the LA Times released an article showing it, they reversed their opinion and said it was enemy planes, and they didn't know what it was. And much later, there was this document that was released through the Freedom of Information Act, explaining the whole story from start to finish. And so it was obvious that these guys were interested in the stuff, while at the same time this document, you know, was being written, they were denying any knowledge or interest in it.
Yeah.
So that's one. And, you know, there's a bunch of them. It's hard to list up. There was the Hillencoder document, the estimate of the situation, in which he was, you know, a highly placed military official, and he wrote this whole thing about UFOs and how they were real. And so that was an amazing document. There was the MJ-12 documents, of course, which were really controversial.
You know, actually what we can do is we'll post links, or you can send us links that we can post so that anybody that would want to know more about these things can, like, kind of look at them after they listen to the podcast to kind of investigate further on their own.
Yeah, sure. You know, there's so much out there. There's so many of these documents, and that's one of the forms of evidence, just one, you know, that I point people to. There's lots of others, like the implant evidence is equally impressive.
And implants.
Yeah, what? Explain that a little bit further. I'm intrigued by that right now.
I'm a little scared, actually.
Yeah, the alien implant. This, you know, this field is ripe for research. Let me tell you, because there's this crazy thing going on where people claim to have been implanted by ETs, and I've talked to.
Implanted with in what way?
Tracking device or what?
Or like babies?
With some sort of device. With babies as well, yeah. I mean, for that matter, but that's not exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about these.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, these devices, which we don't know what they're for, to a certain extent. I mean, a lot of people feel they're for tracking, or for brainwashing or mind control, that sort of thing. But I have to tell you, I've talked to now growing number of cases. It's probably close to a half dozen or more, where these abductees asked the ETs, what's the implant for? And they said it's for measuring the level of pollution in your body. It's for boosting your immune system. It's for monitoring your vitals. And this sort of thing. That I've heard several times.
Wow.
So people have found them inside of them? Where do they find it inside of them?
It's in different places. I've talked to one guy I wrote a book with. He's got all these MRIs done. He's got them in his brain.
What?
That's how they were diagnosed as foreign bodies. And the X-ray guys are like, yeah, we see these every now and then. We don't know what they are.
A tumor.
They're little, you know, solid things. And some have been removed and some are metallic. There's a few that are actually giving off radio waves. Some are like magnetic. Some have no scars above them at all. But people can still relate it to an onboard experience where they remember, you know, physically being implanted. There's all these weird effects. No foreign body reaction. Normally when you have something in your body, you know, it's going to form a calcium wall around it. And reject it,
especially in your brain. Especially in your brain. Like, that seems like it would cause a lot of damage. They don't have a lot of space for foreign objects in there.
No. So there's been, you know, not a lot of people doing this. There's this one guy, of course, Dr. Lear, who did most of these surgeries. He recently passed away, unfortunately. So I'm not sure there's anyone who's really doing this in any kind of full-time way. Because, you know, it costs a lot of money, and it's very controversial, and the results didn't quite go off as a smoking gun that they really should have been. Because this stuff is, I mean, it's really crazy stuff. With the level of evidence that we have, where you can prove this stuff, there's medical evidence.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, like I was talking about healing cases. I wrote a book about that. That was one of my first books.
Yeah, I saw that. UFO Healings, or I believe is what it was called.
Right. You know, which I thought, oh, people have a psychopathological need to believe in a higher power if they think ETs are going to come here and save them.
Yeah.
You know,
before I wrote that book. But, you know, and I still think that that's certainly the case in some cases. But I found 100 cases, and I've since found a bunch more. And some of them are really well verified, I have to tell you. These guys have been examined one case, a guy grew a new set of teeth after being struck by a beam of light, and he was examined by like 50 doctors, a bunch of UFO investigators, government officials, military officials. There was landing traces involved in his case. Other stuff like that. Fish turned up dead in the stream right next to where this UFO landed.
Wow.
So it's a good case. There's a bunch like it.
To kind of just tie all this together, because we want to move on to the other parts of the ghost and out-of-body part of the show, just through all these kind of different things you've said, through the government kind of trying to hide some information and through kind of just the different encounters, what would you say is the primary like purpose of aliens coming to do these things? I mean, like, why would the government not want people to know about it? And what would they be doing, healing some people and abducting others? Trace, like, what do you think is like actually going on?
All right. That's a lot of questions. And, really hard ones too.
you can answer whatever part of that, but that's kind of just like the main thing that I've always wondered, and I probably Brandon too, is just what are they doing? Like, what are they harm? Are they, like, I guess the main question is like, are they harmful or not? Because I think that would be the main thing that would want keep the government from wanting us to know about them is if, like, there's some kind of threat.
Right. I think to a certain extent our government does believe they're a threat, and I think you can make a strong argument to support that. If you look at the number of abductions and the way UFOs have shut down our missiles and are hovering over our power stations, nuclear and, you know, water dams and otherwise, certainly you can make an argument that these are not our, you know, necessarily our buddy-buddy friends right off the bat, because they're behaving in a very military way. But this is kind of a military mindset. If that's the way you look at it, you can see threat, where it turns out, you know, these things, in my estimation, I think most UFO investigators will agree that these are very powerful craft, very powerful technology, and they can do whatever the heck they want. If they wanted to take over, they could, and they haven't. So it's very hard to argue, hostility.
That's what scares people, I think, too. Like, what I mean, to believe in aliens, you'd have to also believe in a pretty a threat that you really don't have any kind of control over. I mean, what would we do? You know,
right, right. And it hits people really right in your home, kind of, if you know what I mean, right in your center core there of beliefs. And it's hard to believe when you hear all these accounts of levitation and healings and, you know, people moving through walls. And I mean, it gets worse. So I can understand skepticism. Mm-hmm. But we're sort of stuck with these stories. I think the basic alien agenda is multifold. I think they've got a couple of reasons that they're here. And it depends on which race you're talking about.
Yeah,
I think there's like three or four main races that are visiting us. These grays, these Nordics or human-looking ones, and these kind of grasshopper type. And you know, you could talk about the reptilians as well. But those are the main types that certainly I've talked to people about, and those are the kinds of reports I get. And they fall into, you know, pretty standard categories. I think the alien agenda, I'm going to be honest, is first they're very interested in us.
Yeah.
And everything about us, whether it's our human body, they know more about it than us. And our emotions, they're just enamored with us in some way. They have an agenda, I think, to save our planet. They're constantly warning people about nuclear proliferation, environmental destruction, pollution, overpopulation, things like this over and over again. So that's a very strong agenda. They seem to be very interested in waking people up and making them like alternative healers or psychics or, you know, out-of-body travelers or getting into people's past lives. There's this whole weird spiritual aspect that turns up again and again. And so that's clearly one of their agendas as well, is, you know, at least they're very interested in that type of person.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm not sure if they're going to show themselves anytime soon.
Sure.
But I think that's what we're trending towards. I really do. And I think it's inevitable. You know, a la Phoenix Lights or, you know, Gulf Breeze or the Hudson Valley Wave. They're just going to show up and they're not going to go away.
Yeah.
So one final question I want to have, just asking your opinion on this. What would you recommend to people? I mean, what would you tell people is the value in kind of starting to investigate this stuff? Like, what do you think it's going to do for us to know about this? If, I mean, there's really nothing we can do about it, or what, you know, we don't have a way to keep them from doing it. Like, what do you think will help people to be able to know about it?
Well, I think that there's a number of reasons that this subject is really important. First of all, it could solve the energy crisis overnight. And this is why it's very, you know, people should be concerned about this, because we have these crashed UFOs, we have this ET technology, we have basically free energy, and that's, you know, not being released because we're an oil-based economy, and this is one of the strongest reasons for the cover-up, I think.
Really?
So that's why this is a really important subject. For that matter, we have the tools to clean up our environment, and that's another reason that it's very important. And it could solve the economic crisis. So we've got three major things that we're dealing with.
It's a super complicated issue then.
So would
it's very important.
Would you say that the government is essentially covering this up, even though it could basically fix almost all of our problems, mainly just because they don't know what will come of them telling us about it?
Essentially, yes. And when I say the government, it's more the, you know, the generals, the military,
sure,
and the very upper levels. It's the secret government. It's semi-corporate. It's the one percenters. It's the guys who have their hands on this technology, and they're not about to let it go.
Hmm.
They're making money off oil. They're bankrupting one country after another. They're controlling the banking system. They're behind the drug industry. You know, Monsanto, it's this whole unbelievable conspiracy where they're choking the entire world. It's unbelievable.
Do you think that they feel threatened by the aliens? I mean, like, in doing this, if they know that the aliens would be wanting to protect the planet, wouldn't that in a way be taking a stance against them, against the aliens, to kind of try and keep people from figuring out this stuff and keeping that free energy and keeping the cleanliness of the planet from occurring?
Yeah, I agree, and I think there's a grassroots war, and this is why people are being taken on board and shown the engine rooms and being told about alternative sources of energy. That's a very strong theme, which I didn't mention, you know, along with healing and environmentalism and that sort of thing. But yeah, they're very interested in alternative sources of energy, and that comes up over and over. And so many people have tried to build these UFO engines. There's case after case in the UFO literature, and some, you know, are pretty impressive.
Hmm.
And I think some people have invented this stuff or, you know, seen it and are trying to duplicate it. And their technology, their inventions are being covered up. It's despicable. And yeah, there is a grassroots war. And I think the ETs are trying to disclose, trying to wake up humanity, trying to, you know, certainly they're not happy about wars and things like this. That's been mentioned several times.
Here's my last question. As you've talked about aliens and kind of, they seem to be very much in control. They seem to very much know what they want to do. And they're almost godlike. And so my question is this. Do you think it's possible for somebody to believe in God or in a God and also believe in UFOs and aliens? Or do you think that once somebody believes in aliens, it kind of throws out the idea of another God being able to be in existence?
Right. Well, you know, I've seen people go both ways. I've seen people become really religious and kind of call these ETs angels. I've had people tell me, the ETs told me that, you know, people have mistaken us for angels, and that kind of ruined religion for them. And other people, you know, who've walked away from religion because of this and just become more deeply spiritual. That's more the trend I see than, you know, otherwise. But there are some people who really kind of are really religious when this happens to them. And they kind of take a little bit of a filter with that through their experience and kind of interpret it that way.
Interesting.
So you get some sort of religious themes at times in this stuff. It's not super common, but for the most part, yeah, I think it moves people away from that and wakes them up and makes them realize not necessarily not believe in God, but away from organized religion.
Gotcha. All right, Preston, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be in touch, all right?
All right, my pleasure. Thanks.
All right, have a
good
one.
Thank you.
And that was Preston Dennett talking to us about UFOs. Dave, your thoughts, your concerns, your feelings.
What a guy. You know what? One of the things we talked about was how when people think of UFOs and think of aliens, they just kind of think of one thing. But what Preston really, I think, shed light on is that there is so much to this. There is, he mentioned, I mean, right at the end there, multiple species of aliens, and he mentioned that there's just totally different encounters that people have with aliens, whether it's an abduction or whether it's just seeing a UFO, or, you know, whether it's just something that that he's seen for himself, or whether he's interviewed somebody. There's just a lot of different angles that this could take.
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that was the most surprising that I literally had never heard before was the hybrid babies, or whatever he called them. Like the fact that aliens abduct women and take whatever from them, and then make a baby out of it. Like that to me is the weirdest thing in the world.
Well, and I assume that that's only going to work with one of the species of the aliens, the one that's the humanoid, because he mentioned that there's also some bug-like ones and such. But and the reptilian. But what another thing that I think was just that really has got me to the point I just don't understand is why the government would know about it and then just not want anyone else to know about it. Especially when he mentioned like things like unlimited energy and clean planet being clean, like as possible.
I get it a little bit. Like
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. He explained it, but that's where I was before. I was like, why would that be something? But there's just a lot. Like, again, there's so many angles to this, whether they'd be a threat if they're there. And, and then, like you said, there's the conspiracy of the government trying to make money off of the oil still and such. But I think that the most interesting thing about that is that if that is true, then the government is putting their foot down into the aliens. So I feel like, where's that going to lead us? I don't know what that's going to – the long term of that. So.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. And I think it helped us – I think it was a great first interview because it kind of – he really laid it all out there. And now we can kind
now we can
go from there and ask more specifics about – about certain species.
And Brent, you know, he mentioned he started just like us, skeptics.
That's exactly
so
right. So maybe
that's Preston's us in, you know, a couple years. Maybe. Probably a couple more. Takes some time.
I think he's like 50 something, so.
Do you want us to say that?
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know why I assume that. I feel like I've read it somewhere.
You know what it is? He sounds like he's had 100 years experience, and the least you can do is cut it in half.
That's exactly right. We are going to do more with Preston Dennett next week on the Starry Time Podcast next Friday. We're going to be talking about out-of-body experiences. We've actually already done that interview.
Don't remove the curtain.
I know. Wizard of Oz. Let me – I just want to make sure everyone's aware of the fact that next week's episode is one of the more interesting, weird, entertaining things I've listened to in a long time.
And also, it's an episode that – I mean, we talk about some things that really – I mean, you're going to feel separate from. I mean, if you've never seen an alien – I guess I'm addressing one part of our –
sure.
Of our listeners.
Yeah.
Maybe you're someone that hasn't seen an alien or had any of that kind of encounter. That's going to feel kind of just like a distant topic that we're discussing. But what Preston is talking about in this next one is going to be he has tips and steps on how to apply it directly to your life. So I think it'll hit a little closer to home because it feels like it's right around everybody what he's talking about. So it's interesting.
So we will we'll be releasing that next Friday. Look for an episode every Friday here on the Starry Time Podcast. Subscribe to us on the podcast apps and whatnot.
Right.
And if you have a guest that you would like us to interview, you can email us at starrytimepodcast@gmail.com. Obviously, Starry is with one R because we just really went for it. So
even if that guest is you, do you want to be on the show?
Yeah, why not?
We'll talk to you.
We'll talk to you about what you think. Big thanks to Steve for our logo and also for doing the news. And big thanks.
Love that guy.
Big thanks to you for listening and subscribing. Please let us know what you think of the show, what we can do to make it better, what we could do to make it worse, if that's your thing, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I would like to say something cheesy along the lines of, we do this for the fans. But, Brian, let's be honest. We do this for ourselves.
Literally, no one could listen to this and I'd probably still do it.
Yeah. And so what I'm going to say is we do this for ourselves and we hope that we have some casualties as far as some minds being blown in the process. And that could be you. So
what a way to say that,
it's true though.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening from Greenville, South Carolina in New York City. Have a great night.
Yep. See you later.
Wait, what?
I was going to say, maybe I should say, let's do it. Like,
okay.
You say where you're from. I mean, this is our first one. We'll get it.
Yeah,
next time.
Let's do it. Here we go.
Okay.
From Greenville, South Carolina.
In New York City.
Have a great night.
Oh, news out.
Yeah.